Greetings, and welcome to the CorMedix first quarter 2017 conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Josh Drum, Investor Relations for CorMedix. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Kevin. Good afternoon and welcome to the CorMedix first quarter 2017 investor conference call. Before turning the call over to management, I would like to make the following remarks concerning forward-looking statements. During the call, we may make what are known as forward-looking statements within the meaning set forth in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These statements are subject to certain risks and uncertainties and include but are not limited to any of the following. Any statements other than statements of historical fact regarding management's expectations, beliefs, goals, and plans about the company's prospects, including its clinical development program for Neutrolin in the United States and other product candidates, future financial position, future revenue, and future projected costs, and market acceptance of Neutrolin and other product candidates. More specifically, forward-looking statements include any statements about our clinical development plans and the timing, costs, and results thereof, projections as to the company's future capital raising, spending, and cash position, expectations as to the timing and nature of anticipated regulatory actions, possible product licensing or other business development transactions, any commercial plans and expectations, market projections for our product candidates, and expectations as to manufacturing and product component costs. Our actual results may differ materially from these projections or estimates due to a variety of important factors, including but not limited to uncertainties related to clinical development, regulatory approvals, and commercialization. These risks are described in greater detail in CorMedix filings with the SEC, copies of which are available free of charge at the SEC's website at www.sec.gov or upon request from CorMedix. CorMedix may not actually achieve the goals or plans described in these forward-looking statements, and investors should not place undue reliance on these statements. Please note that CorMedix does not intend to update these forward-looking statements except as required by law. At this time, it is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Koso Baloc, Chief Executive Officer of CorMedix. Koso, please go ahead.
Thanks, Josh. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on our call today. During this call, the team and I will lay out the progress we have made over the last several months across multiple fronts. Against a backdrop of changing market conditions, including updates on our current Phase 3 study and ongoing communications with the FDA. The four areas we will cover are the following: our recent financing, an update on the ongoing Lockheed 100 clinical trial of Neutrolin in patients with end-stage renal disease receiving hemodialysis through central venous catheters, the advancement in our taurolidine-based development pipeline, and progress in our European commercialization of Neutrolin under our CE mark. As you know, we are focused on bringing Neutrolin, a broad-spectrum non-antibiotic anti-infective solution designated to prevent costly and dangerous bloodstream infections associated with the use of central venous catheters, to the U.S. market. To that end, we recently completed a public offering of shares and warrants, with gross proceeding totaling $14 million U.S. dollars. That will be used to continue the development of Neutrolin in the ongoing Lockheed 100 and the second and final Lockheed 200 Phase 3 clinical studies. Our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Judith Abrams, will provide an update to our U.S. clinical program for Neutrolin in just a few minutes. For now, I will say that our patient enrollment rates remain strong, and as we stated in our recent trial update, we anticipate exceeding our original enrollment target of 632 patients by the fourth quarter of 2017. As we await clarity from the ongoing discussions with the FDA regarding possible prospective change to the Lockheed 100 trial protocol related, in part to the apparent overall lower baseline rate of catheter-related bloodstream infection events, I am pleased that our continued surveillance and strategic activation of new clinical trial sites has kept our enrollment on track. an independent data safety monitoring board recently completed a planned safety review of Locket 100 clinical trials and unanimously concluded that it's safe to continue the trial as designed. These results are consistent with our safety experience with Neutrolin in Europe. We are pleased that the results of this safety review are in line with Neutrolin's anticipated product profile as a well-tolerated and has the potential to reduce catheter-related infections. With the planned interim data safety monitor board review behind us, efficient enrollment of hemodialysis patients remain our top focus. We are making every effort to facilitate a potential interim analysis of the Locket 100 data by the end of the year, which is dependent upon attainment of a prerequisite number of bloodstream infections in the study. We are hopeful that we can reach this important milestone as planned for the end of 2017 calendar year, which will give us our first look in the U.S. at Neutrolin's potential ability to reduce catheter-related bloodstream infections in patients with end-stage renal disease receiving hemodialysis through a central venous catheter. In addition to advancing Neutrolin in the U.S., last month we announced exciting news that we had secured our first European commercial collaboration with Hemotech, a French company based in Toulouse, to launch and market Neutrolin throughout France and French overseas territories. I will elaborate on this shortly, but first I'd like to turn the call over to Bob Cook, our Chief Financial Officer, for the financial update. Bob?
Thanks very much, Koso. The company will shortly be filing its 10-Q for the quarter ended March 31, 2017. My financial report today largely compares our results for the first quarter 2017 versus the fourth quarter 2016, except where comparisons with the first quarter 2016 are necessary or useful standard financial metrics. I urge you to read the information contained in the 10-Q report for a more complete explanation of our financial results. With respect to our first quarter 2017 financial results, our net loss was approximately $7.6 million or 19 cents per share, compared with a net loss of $4.1 million or 11 cents per share for the first quarter 2016. Our net loss in the fourth quarter of 2016 was $6.4 million, or 16 cents per share. Operating expenses in the first quarter 2017 were $7.6 million, compared with $6.5 million in the fourth quarter of 2016. The increase in operating expenses compared with the previous quarter was due to a $0.9 million or 22% increase in R&D expense and a $0.2 million or 8% increase in G&A expense. The growth in R&D expense in the first quarter was led by a $0.5 million or 21% increase in clinical trial expense and a $0.3 million or 20% increase in other R&D expense, primarily manufacturing and employee costs. During the quarter, we continued to increase our patient enrollment rate in the Locket 100 clinical trial, intensified our Neutrolin CMC efforts, hired our new chief medical officer and additional clinical staff, and converted some of our consultants to employee status. We expect R&D expense to continue to increase from present levels over the next several quarters due to the pace of enrollment in the Locket 100 trial and to certain other CMC activities. G&A expense growth from the fourth quarter of 2016 was led by a $0.1 million increase in stock-based compensation, plus smaller increases in consulting and accounting fees and employee costs. Our cash used in operations in the first quarter 2017 was $6.8 million, compared with $6.5 million in the fourth quarter 2016. Cash was used primarily to conduct our Phase 3 study of Neutrolin, other R&D and related G&A activities. Our operating cash burn was funded primarily via drawdown of our cash on hand. Approximately $0.3 million was provided by the use of our ATM during the month of January 2017. As Koso mentioned, we recently completed a public offering of common stock and warrants, resulting in gross proceeds of approximately $14 million before deducting underwriting discounts and commissions and estimated offering expenses. The offering included the full exercise of H.C. Wainwright & Company's option to purchase additional shares of common stock and warrants from CorMedics. This offering closed last week on May 3rd. As of March 31, the company had cash and short-term investments of approximately $13.8 million. Based on our first quarter 2017 cash burn, this amount of cash would have been sufficient to fund the company's operations for approximately 6 months, which we judged an uncomfortably short and risky time period. Further, as we expect our cash burn to increase significantly over the balance of the year, primarily as a result of the pace of enrollment in the Lockett 100 trial, required CMC expenses, and the planned commencement of the Lockett 200 trial, we concluded that without timely access to additional funding, we might be forced to curtail patient enrollment and hence jeopardize the timing of our anticipated milestones. In addition to potentially increasing the duration of the clinical trial and possibly delaying the NDA filing, any enrollment-related delay would certainly increase the cost of the clinical trial over and above any resulting from our proposed protocol changes. We surveyed the market during the first quarter, seeking indications of interest in a financing of a size that would enable us to avoid returning for additional funding for at least several months. We then paused our financing efforts temporarily when we concluded that we would advise the market of the apparent overall lower rate of bloodstream infections that was observed in the trial, as well as our ongoing discussions with FDA concerning potential protocol changes to address this and other issues. This work took several weeks to complete, ultimately resulting in our April 20th trial update press release. Once back on track, we confronted a market that had softened due to a high level of issuance. We were disappointed by the terms of the offering and then by the stock's post-transaction performance, but we closed the transaction nevertheless because we judged that foregoing the additional cash would impact our ability to raise cash in the future and would slow the momentum we had gained in the clinical trial. We believe that with the milestones upcoming over the next several months, there will be opportunities for the stock to regain ground lost over the last few weeks. Given the significant cost of the current Lockett clinical trial and the anticipated start of our Lockett 200 trial by year-end, our cash and short-term investments of March 31st and the net proceeds from the recent financing are unlikely to be sufficient to fund our operations for the next 12 months. However, as a result of the financing, we have lengthened our cash runway, and assuming the one-year warrants issued as part of the financing are exercised prior to their expiration, we will obtain additional cash that can be used to partially fund our cash requirements in 2018. Once we gain clarity with respect to the adoption of the proposed protocol amendments, we will be able to adjust our forecasts and determine with a higher degree of confidence our future cash requirements. It's now my pleasure to introduce our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Judith Abrams, who is joining our call for the first time to give you a more detailed update on our Lockett 100 trial currently underway. Judith?
Thank you, Bob. It's my pleasure to participate on today's call and provide an update on Neutrolin's U.S. clinical program. As Koso mentioned, the Independent Data Safety Monitoring Board unanimously concluded that it was safe to continue the Lockett 100 clinical trial as designed. This recommendation was based upon its evaluation of data from the first 279 patients randomized into this event-driven clinical trial. We recently announced that CorMedics is engaged in discussions with the FDA regarding possible prospective changes to the Lockett 100 protocol, in part to account for an apparent overall lower baseline rate of catheter-related bloodstream infection events. As these discussions remain ongoing, we will provide further detail on the possible protocol amendments following conclusion of our discussions with the FDA. As we stated in our most recent trial update, we currently anticipate patient enrollment to exceed the originally targeted total of 632 patients, and patient enrollment may continue into the second quarter of 2018 to enable us to obtain the final planned number of requisite catheter-related bloodstream infection events. If the requisite number of catheter-related bloodstream infection events are attained within this projected time frame, top-line results from the LOCK-IT 100 clinical trial would be anticipated around year-end 2018, following the conclusion of the patient safety observation period. As Koso mentioned, we are making every effort to enroll additional patients as efficiently as possible to meet these milestones. In parallel, we are pleased that the FDA accepted our proposal to include one or more interim efficacy analyses while the LOCK-IT 100 clinical trial is ongoing. The original trial protocol did not include any such analyses. These planned interim efficacy analyses should allow us to obtain our first look in the U.S. at Neutrolin's potential ability to reduce catheter-related bloodstream infections in patients with end-stage renal disease receiving hemodialysis through a central venous catheter. The timing of the interim analyses is also event-driven, but we currently anticipate that the first interim analysis may occur as early as the fourth quarter of 2017, pending attainment of the requisite number of catheter-related bloodstream infection events. We look forward to providing timely updates on the status of the LOCK-IT 100 trial, as well as the timing of potential interim analyses. We remain entirely focused on the successful completion of the Neutrolin registrational program and to bringing Neutrolin to market in the U.S. Our goal, and the goal of health organizations around the world, is to eliminate costly and potentially deadly catheter-related bloodstream infections altogether. We believe, based on its broad-spectrum antimicrobial activity, that Neutrolin can help achieve this goal upon potential approval. With that, I would like to hand the call back to Koso for a discussion about our development pipeline based on taurolidine, the active component of Neutrolin. Koso?
Thank you, Judith. While our main focus remains on gaining U.S. approval of Neutrolin, we are continuing to take advantage of additional opportunities to generate value for CorMedics based on taurolidine. We've discussed our preliminary efforts in the medical device space, where taurolidine may be incorporated into various medical and surgical materials to confer antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory properties. We've also discussed our ongoing work with POET Consortium to combine taurolidine with other chemotherapies targeting cancer. On the medical device front, based on initial feasibility work in a number of different areas, we have made the strategic decision to focus our effort on investigating the incorporation of taurolidine into surgical meshes, suture materials, and hydrogels. We view this opportunity as the low-hanging fruits in an attractive market where we believe taurolidine-infused products could have significant impact. I won't go into details on this call, as we plan to schedule a more robust R&D day event to discuss our taurolidine-based pipeline within the coming months. But we currently expect to pursue the development of antimicrobial sutures for use following surgery and wound care, nanofibers mesh to provide antimicrobial structure support for burns and hernia repair, and antimicrobial hydrogels to prevent infections and promote healing of burns and diabetic foot ulcers. Once we've demonstrated proof of concept in vitro and in animal models, we will look to establish strategic partnerships to take these programs through the next stage along the 510K pathway. We will look to leverage the relatively shorter development pathway for medical devices to bring near-term value to CorMedics. As I mentioned, we are preparing to discuss our current and planned pipeline activities in greater detail at an upcoming live meeting. We expect this event to take place in New York but will be webcast and archived on our website for all to listen. We will advise you on when that meeting will be taking place as soon as it is scheduled. Before I discuss our progress in commercializing Neutrolin in Europe, I'd like to hand the call to Tony Pfaffel, the Chief Scientific Officer, to talk about our recent work exploring the use of taurolidine to combat an emerging fungal pathogen that is causing concern in hospitals across the globe. Tony?
Thanks, Koso. Candida auris, or C. auris, is a fungus, a species of pathogenic yeast that has emerged over the past few years as a serious global health threat, according to the Centers for Disease Control. It is responsible for severe illness, as well as life-threatening bloodstream and wound infections in hospitalized patients worldwide. Certain strains are resistant to all major classes of antifungal drugs, something that has not been seen before in other species of Candida. C. auris has been shown to inhabit and persist on surfaces in healthcare environments in the form of resistant biofilm and can readily spread between patients, making it even more difficult to control. Of greatest relevance to CorMedics is that the CDC has reported that patients with central venous catheters are among those at greatest risk of infection with C. auris, which can enter the bloodstream and spread throughout the body, causing serious invasive infections. As you know, taurolidine is the active antimicrobial component of our catheter lock solution, Neutrolin, which is specifically designed to prevent this kind of bloodstream infection caused by an infected central venous catheter. Based on the mechanism of action of taurolidine and the fact that it has been shown to be effective against a broad spectrum of bacteria and fungi, including multi-drug-resistant strains, we set out to test taurolidine against Candida auris to see if it could have a beneficial impact on this significant threat to global hospitals. We partnered with the premier microbiology and antimicrobial surveillance laboratory, JMI Labs, to conduct the sensitivity testing. They found that Candida auris strains, including clinical isolates provided by the CDC, were 100% inhibited by taurolidine in vitro at the concentration currently contained in Neutrolin, which has been shown to be safe in all clinical studies to date. While preliminary, these results are very encouraging because taurolidine's potential efficacy against this deadly pathogen could add value across our entire pipeline. Sensitivity of C. auris to the taurolidine contained in Neutrolin may effectively reduce or prevent catheter-related bloodstream infections caused by this important pathogen, with potentially positive implications for Europe, where Neutrolin is a CE-marked product, as well as in the U.S. upon potential approval by the Food and Drug Administration. Beyond Neutrolin, however, if we can demonstrate that the taurolidine contained in our sutures, meshes, and hydrogels currently in development is also effective against C. auris, we may be able to prevent or treat C. auris infections following surgery in burns and in diabetic foot ulcers. We look forward to determining a path to work with global regulatory agencies to leverage the benefits of taurolidine and to help prevent resistant microbial infections. With that, I'll hand the call back to Koso to discuss our commercial efforts for Neutrolin in Europe. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. As I mentioned, CorMedics secured our first European commercial collaboration with Hemotech to launch and market Neutrolin throughout France and French overseas territories. This landmark European agreement enables CorMedics to leverage Hemotech's nearly 30 years of experience delivering high-quality products to the hemodialysis community. Hemotech is the perfect partner to offer an innovative product like Neutrolin in these territories. based on its significant presence across multiple clinic settings. Its reach includes 92% of all French dialysis organizations, as well as major hospitals, where Neupruin CE mark allows it to be marketed as a catheter lock solution for oncology and ICU patients with central venous catheters. We expect this initial commercial collaboration to enable CorMedix to begin augmenting our commercial presence in Europe. We intend to pursue additional partnerships designed to further expand ex-US sales of Neupruin, with the expectation that we will begin to generate initial sales revenues in the quarters to come, which may over time partially offset our operational and clinical development costs in the US. We look forward to providing updates as we form commercial partnerships in additional ex-US territories. In conclusion, CorMedix remains focused on the success of our Phase 3 clinical program to secure FDA approval of Neupruin in the US. In the face of mounting antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections, the development and approval of a novel antimicrobial is important now more than ever. This is why we are dedicated to bringing Neupruin to the market to help prevent potential deadly catheter-related bloodstream infections in already vulnerable patient population. Let me say that I too am disappointed with our current stock price. However, our recent financing adds fuel to continue our pivotal clinical program, which will benefit from both FDA Fast Track, providing the potential for priority review of our marketing application, and the QIDP designation, which secures up to 10 years of market exclusivity upon potential approval. In parallel, we're advancing our pipeline beyond Neupruin to include multiple medical device opportunities, as well as therapeutic use of taurolidine in orphan oncology indications. In short, we are moving along various pathways to increase value for CorMedix and its shareholders, and we look forward to providing the next update. With that, we can now move to the Q&A portion of the call.
Thank you. We'll now be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our first question today is coming from Ram Selvaraju from Ryman Renshaw. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I have one detailed question and two very minor ones. The detailed question pertains to the potential format of the proposed interim analyses in the Locket 100 study. Could you give us a sense of how these analyses might compare to the final top-line data with respect to the types of endpoints you expect to use? Is there going to be no difference, and is it simply just a question of the number of events that are going to be the subject of the interim analyses, or are there some other nuances that we should be aware of? And then with respect to the recent disclosure that taurolidine has been shown to be active against Candida auris, can you give us some additional background on this multi-drug resistant organism? Have there been any cases of C. auris reported in the hospital setting in the United States as of yet? When was the first case reported in Europe? I believe it was in London in late 2016, but correct me if I'm wrong. And what do you anticipate being the relative incidence and prevalence of this organism in the context of bloodstream infections specifically? And then, Bob, I just had one clarificatory question for you. In the SG&A line item for this quarter, could you give us a breakdown of how much of that number was directly related to selling as opposed to G&A? Thank you.
Hey, Raj. Thanks very much for your question. So what I would do is the first question I'm going to ask Judith to help answer related to the interim question, The second part, the C. aureus, I'm going to ask Tony to elaborate, and then, as you already decided, it's going to be Bob, so Bob will do the third one. So let's first begin with Judith. Judith?
Hi, Raj. As I understand your question, you asked about the format of the interim analysis, and in particular how it compares to the final top line with regards to the analyses planned. So the interim analysis is going to be on a portion of the study population, and it will look at the primary study endpoint as well as the safety. We'll give us, the DSMB will be doing this on our behalf, and will give us an indication as to how to proceed with the study.
All right. Tony?
Thank you.
Yes, so you're correct. In Europe, the UK in 2016 reported a significant number of cases. Since then, the US CDC has reported cases with highest prevalence in New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and Indiana, with a significant number of cases in New York. So the Department of Health, New York State Department of Health, is targeted as a major pathogen to be dealt with. The first reported case was in Japan in 1996, and since then it's been reported in 9 countries over 4 continents. It's most concerning because it's resistant to fluconazole and most all isolates, 50% resistance to voriconazole, and about 33% resistance is seen to amphotericin B. So it's MDR, multi-drug resistant pathogen, and that's why both CDC and the state health departments are laser focused on addressing this concern. And one of the major issues is catheter-related bloodstream infections. So that's why we're looking forward to helping address this issue.
Thank you, Tony. Bob, with the third question?
Yeah. Raj, thanks very much for giving me the easiest one. Your question, I think, related to what number or how much within the total SG&A expense line related to selling expenses. And the answer is the number is very small. It's between $100,000 and $200,000. So it pretty much is meaningless, which is generally why in my comments I forget to mention the selling part and just talk about G&A.
Okay, thank you. I'll jump back in the queue. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Ed White from FTB and Company. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, yes, it's FBR and Company. Just a few questions. First, as far as the marketing agreement in Europe and in France, when will we see the first impact to your sales number? Is it this quarter, next quarter? You know, is it late 2017? Then the next question is just on, you had mentioned the Locket 200, and I'm just curious as if you can pin down more of a date of when that will start and what the study will look like. Thirdly, you did mention, and I'm glad to see it, the other potential products in surgical meshes and wound management, et cetera. When will you start? I know you said you're going to go over to the R&D day, so maybe you don't want to answer it, but just when can we see some clinical, preclinical data, and do you expect to partner right after that before first in human? And then lastly, if I can just a question for Bob regarding the diluted share count now after the deal. What that level is now, because also when you're talking about the cash runway, did I hear you right to say that you, even with the raise, you're not going to make it through 2018? So we should expect another raise between now and then. Thanks for the question.
Okay, so let me begin with taking the first three questions that you posed, Ed. So the marketing agreement in France, basically they have started the launch of it at the tail end of April. So we should begin to see sales during this quarter. And so that will now begin to come. Again, it will start slow, and it will pick up as we go quarter by quarter for going forward. Your second question about Lock 200. With the recent activities we have had with Lock 100 and our refinancing, at the moment, we still have work to do on Lock 200. So at the moment, I'm seeing it for us to start something by the tail end of this year. We will be able to provide more update once we have finalized our ongoing discussions with the FDA on Lock 100. The third question, as you talked about the pipeline, the R&D day that we will have, which I expect will be happening over the next few months, and I'm talking of potentially 2 or 3 months, you're going to see the feasibility work that we have already done with the sutures, the hydrogels, the meshes. So you're going to see that work. In parallel, we are doing further improving the efficiency of the technology that we've got there, plus completing the animal models. And our goal will be that when we do have the R&D day, we will share more details about when to expect each of these different data points to be coming. But all of them should take place during 2017. For your fourth question, I'm going to hand it over to Bob. About the diluted shares.
Yeah, so Ed, before the offering, we had, it was about 40.8 million shares outstanding, and we issued in the offering another 18.6. So the diluted count following the offering then would put us at, according to my numbers here on my napkin, 459.4 million.
And when I was talking about fully diluted, that includes warrants?
No, it doesn't. I mean, we haven't done that. I haven't done the warrant calculation because we technically haven't issued those warrants yet. So I'd have to go back and look at that, but I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. That was the number that I was looking for. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, we can get that to you. The other thing with respect to the cash. The simple answer is no. The existing cash does not get us to the end of 2018. If you look at the amount of cash that we spent in the first quarter, it was $6.8 million, right? And on a pro forma basis, our existing cash at March 31 was 13.8, and another 13 from the offering, so that's 26. So that indicates that we'd have about four quarters of cash if our burn rate was to continue at the same level as the first quarter. So that by itself does not get us to the end of 2018. And then on top of that, you know, we are expecting the burn to increase as the costs for the clinical trial increased. But I don't have good numbers on that because we're still working that out based on, you know, what the patient levels are going to look like. But so, I mean, I that's the best we can do for the moment. I think we need to look, you know, we need to consider, you know, based on the current burn and what the current cash is, to give us a sense really of, you know, what the needs are. And whether that's through another raise or some other opportunity remains to be seen. I mean, there's certainly no rush at this point to go and do anything new. So, you know, we'll just be assessing the options we have. I mean, we do have the preclinical stuff that COSO has been talking about. There could be things that happen there. So there's a lot of opportunities that could happen between now and the time that it would be necessary to look at having more cash in the bank.
Okay, great. Thanks. And then just a last question. When will you know what the final enrollment or what you believe will be the final enrollment numbers for Lockett 100?
Judith?
Well, we are in active dialogue with the FDA, and we should know by the third quarter of this year all the final details regarding the protocol and the size.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my questions.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you. Our next question today is coming from Gail Collins, a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks for taking my question. I'd like to know why the infection rate is so low.
Judith?
Yeah. So the infection rate is actually consistent with what we see in the published literature. And there's a very broad range, and the infection rate is changing over time as more rigorous management of these patients is brought to bear, and also in the clinical trial setting that may have had an impact. But what we look like we're observing at present is well within the range of what's reported in the population.
Thank you. Our next question today is coming from Ivan Fraser, a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. I would like to know how many infections have occurred in the study so far.
Judith?
Yes. So, these kinds of details we don't discuss because of the potential for introducing bias in an ongoing clinical trial. It's a great question, and we look forward to sharing all this data with you as the trial comes to conclusion.
Thank you. Our next question today is coming from Larry Stedman, a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hi, thanks. I want to know if you have enough cash to finish the phase 3 trials, and if not, how much more cash and time will be required until you get to FDA approval?
Okay. Bob?
The answer is that at this point, it's safe to say that we do not have enough cash to finish the phase 3 programs. With Ed just a few minutes ago, we sort of walked through how far the current cash is going to take us. The current plan at this point would be to start a second phase 3 trial at the end of this year, which would go, into, I think, early 2019, although that still remains to be seen. And the fact is that at this point we don't have a hard and fast number for what the total cost of the phase 3 development plan program is going to be, because we haven't costed out, we still have a lot of work to do with respect to the Locket 200 trial. And although we have given estimates for the Locket 100 between the $26 to $30 million range, with the anticipated changes in the trial that we're in the process of making, that estimate is likely to change as well. And certainly it's going to be at the $30 million level thereabouts rather than the $26 million. So I think we'll have some clarity on this over the next several months, but at the current time, I just don't have a number that I can put out with any confidence that could be correct.
Thank you. We have reached the end of our question and answer session. I'd like to turn the floor back over to management for any further closing comments.
Thank you very much. Thank everyone for joining this call this afternoon. Very much looking forward to hearing and seeing many of you during our R&D day that we will cover our pipeline. I think you will be intrigued by the information we will be sharing with you during the R&D day. So thank you once again for joining us, and have a good evening. Bye-bye.